Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Ty Bannerman. The 2020 census begins next month, and that 10-year count affects New Mexicans by determining lots of things, from congressional representation to the allocation of federal dollars. This morning, we will be discussing the importance of getting an accurate population count, and we want to hear from you. Do you have concerns about how the federal government will use your data? Or do you benefit from a program that uses census data for funding purposes like Medicaid, CHIP, or SNAP? Give us a call at 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866. And we are happy this morning to have our media partner, NMPBS, here. They are running a live video feed of the show. You can tune in on their Facebook page, NMPBS, or ours, KUNM Radio, on Facebook. And joining us in the studio today is Robert Radigan. He is the state demographer for New Mexico. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Ty.
So this is the 24th U.S. Census, which is mandated in the very first part of the Constitution. So why did the founders consider the census to be so important?
Well, I think just knowing a head count of the population is fundamental to democracy, right? I mean, the reason that the framers enshrined it in the Constitution was for the purposes of congressional apportionment, also for direct taxes that are no longer applicable these days. But it's become it has far greater meaning these days than just congressional apportionment. It's used to redraw state legislative boundaries, county commission districts, city councils. So any group that's not adequately counted in the census will not have equal representation in those legislative bodies. And as you indicated also, there's $1.5 trillion in annual federal revenue that is distributed to states, counties, cities, even individual households based on these population counts. And then the third reason the census is so critical is just it's the foundation for all the demographic data we use for a host of things. And it becomes that foundation for the next 10 years. So any group not counted in the census won't be adequately reflected in those data.
And what about here specifically in New Mexico? Why does it matter to us?
Well, in New Mexico, the census is so critical because we have a history of being undercounted. So, you know, we know from previous censuses that there are certain demographic groups that tend not to get captured in the census the same as others. Native Americans, Hispanics, all people of color, essentially, people living in poverty, people that live in remote rural areas. And here in New Mexico, we're blessed with a rich diversion of people, but it's part of the reason we're so difficult to count.
So as the state demographer, you work on the data side of the census. Did you do that in 2010 as well?
My department did. Okay. I was not here in New Mexico in 2010, but my department here in the building, Geospatial and Population Studies here at UNM, we've been partnering with the Census Bureau for decades. We've been the state's liaison to the U.S. Census Bureau for many years.
And what does that work actually look like?
So a lot of the work that we're doing throughout the decade is ensuring that the population estimates that the Bureau puts out are accurate. So this, you know, the 2010 count will be the foundation for estimates for 10 more years. So each year we're reviewing those data, making sure that the Census Bureau is using the proper inputs from New Mexico, the birth and death records and things like that. We're reviewing the results to make prior to their release to the public. So that's something we're doing on an annual basis. As far as census preparation, we've been working on that for several years now. But most importantly, in 2018 and 2019, we were ensuring that the Census Bureau's address list is accurate. Mm-hmm. So if a household is not on the Census Bureau's address list, that household will not receive an invitation to respond to the census. Doesn't mean that household can't respond. Just means they won't get an invitation. They won't have a unique ID. The process will look a little bit different for them.
And given kind of New Mexico's unique makeup in terms of large rural areas, is that particularly challenging here?
It is. So that maintaining an accurate and timely address list is a challenge anywhere, but it's particularly challenging in places that use non-city style addresses. So I live here in New Mexico. I live here in Albuquerque. I have an address, 123 Elm Street Northeast. Those are a little bit easier to maintain a record of and to locate on the ground. So you have to assign that address to an XY coordinate on the ground. That's a fairly easy process for those city-style addresses. But when we go out to our tribal areas and other remote rural areas that don't use standard city-style addresses, they're descriptive addresses. It's a very different process, and it's harder for the Bureau to maintain an accurate list, and it's harder for us to help them with that process.
Can you tell me, like, what are the descriptive addresses like?
I mean, on a New Mexico driver's license, you can have an address that says, 5 miles north of intersection Y at County Road X. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. And I'm sure Jamie can tell you what that's like on Navajo Nation as well.
Now, 2020 is the first time that people can fill out the census form online. How do you expect that to affect participation?
Well, I think it'll be easier for folks who have access to reliable broadband. It'll be a fairly simple process. You could do it on any device. You could do it at the library. You could do it on your smartphone. It's going to be a challenge for folks who don't have access to broadband, like our tribal areas and other remote parts of our state. It's important for everybody to recognize that online is not the only option. Everybody in New Mexico can fill out their census online, by phone, or by paper. And for folks who live in areas without good broadband access, the Census Bureau is going to send you a paper form right away on the first contact. Unlike me, I live in urban Albuquerque. First time the Census Bureau contacts me, it's just going to be an invitation to respond online.
Mm-hmm. So we are talking about the census today. Do you plan to participate in the census this year? If so, tell us why it's important to you. Or if you're feeling reluctant about it, what are your concerns? Let us know at 277-5866 or email us at letstalk@kunm.org or tweet to the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. So, Robert, as of yesterday, both the New Mexico Senate and House have approved $8 million in emergency appropriation for census education and outreach. That is now going to the governor for her signature. How will that money be spent?
Well, the governor established what's called the New Mexico Statewide Complete Count Commission. That's about 40 people she appointed to help advise the New Mexico Secretary for the Department of Finance. That's Olivia Padilla Jackson. And DFA is critical because that's the government entity that the legislature has assigned these funds to. They appropriated $3.5 million during the last legislative session, and a lot of those funds were distributed down to local counties and to our tribes because we know from testing that the most effective census messaging is local census messaging. What resonates in one part of our state is not going to resonate in other parts of our state, and so we're trying to localize this effort to the greatest extent possible. So a lot of these $8 million will be going down to counties and tribes in our state, but it will also be a multi-million dollar traditional media campaign. Radio buys, TV buys, billboards, newspapers, things like that.
And you are a member of the Complete Count Committee yourself?
I am.
Okay. Now I'd like to welcome some other members of the Complete Count Committee. We have Catherine McGill. She is the founder and director of the New Mexico Black Leadership Council and the Bernalillo County Complete Count Committee Chair. And Jamie Gloche of Rowan Horse Consulting and the Tribal Representatives Subcommittee Chair. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Catherine, you are the founder and director of the New Mexico Black Leadership Council, as well as the Black History Month Organizing Committee. Can you tell me, why did you decide to make these census efforts a part of your work?
Because I feel like the census is arguably the most important thing that we're going to do in the next decade in New Mexico. And as Robert mentioned, it's about representation. The demographic data that comes from the census is used to determine how resources are apportioned and distributed in New Mexico. And for the Black African American community, including the refugee and immigrant community, there has been a historic undercount. And a lot of it has to do with perhaps apathy, distrust, lack of awareness. And so we need a coordinated strategy to figure out how we overcome some of those issues so that we can encourage people to self-respond to the census.
Okay. And now we've had you on the show before, and we talked about the tricultural myth of New Mexico and how it invisibilizes African Americans and other Black people in New Mexico. How is your... Oh, I don't know. I think we did, but how is your work with the census helping to change that perception?
Well, it's an uphill battle because that tricultural narrative is really pervasive in our state, and it continued with the census. It continues with the census, and it's something that I think we have an opportunity to change, to be able to use this census project as not just a transactional interaction in New Mexico, but something that could be transformational. If we get an accurate count of everyone from all invisible populations, including Blacks and African Americans, it's only going to help our state. So, you know, as the process started, we had to go and say, you forgot to include information about Blacks and African Americans. It's, you know, frustrating, exhausting to have to still be doing that in 2019 and 2020, but it's the work that we're assigned to do. We do see some improvements, and we are hoping that as we continue to talk about what is going to need to be done in order for us to have a transformational 2020 census, it means that we have to inspire people. They have to be passionate about responding to a survey. You know, that's not necessarily going to be easy, and it can only occur when we have appropriately apportioned our resources.
And can you tell me how you are working to inspire people in that way?
Well, what we are saying is that you're going to do it for your ancestors, for your community, and for yourself. And so we know that empowerment and pride, trying to talk about a sense of justice related to the census, that if you have felt disempowered, disenfranchised, this is your opportunity to do something about that. If you take the time to fill out this survey, you're going to be represented, you're going to be counted, and that means something.
Okay. And I have a call from Kyle in Los Alamos. Good morning, Kyle.
Hello.
Hi. What question do you have for us today?
Okay, I received the envelope the other day, and, you know, I wonder about people who think this might be spam, you know, log on to your computer and give us all this information. How do I know this is a legitimate piece of mail, even though it does say .gov? And what about people like elderly people who are never going to get on a computer? Like, I have a mother who is never going to get on a computer and complete something like this. How will she be counted, and how do I know that it's not spam that I just got?
Good question. Robert, do you have any thoughts on that?
Sure. So to the second question, we have to be very clear that everybody in New Mexico has the opportunity to respond to the census online, by phone, or by paper. So anybody not comfortable completing it online, just wait to receive that second form. It might take two or three postcards with an invitation to respond online, but you will eventually receive that paper form, and there will be a 1-800 number, and you can respond to the census in multiple languages. So anybody not comfortable doing it on the computer, just please be patient, and you'll have the opportunity to do it by other means. As far as the invitation to respond that the caller received, I'm not familiar with what that is. The Census Bureau has not sent out these invitations yet, so it sounds to me like she has received a piece of spam. And, I'd have to have a look at it before I evaluate and make any conclusive, say anything definitive about what it is. But this is a part of the campaign, that we have to make sure that we are busting myths, that we are ahead of this game, and making sure that people know what official correspondence from the Census Bureau look like, so that they can identify these things and discard them accordingly.
And Catherine, is that something that you're also working with as well?
Well, I think, you know, people can go online and get a timeline. And all of us are, you know, trying to make sure that we give the actual information about when things are going to be available, when you should be receiving those invitations. And so, you know, I would say that if you receive a piece of mail, and we all get that spam phone call, spam mail, verify. Go online. ICountNM is the state's website, and all of the community organizations have information that go to the census.gov and to ICountNM that are going to give you information that is accurate information. Call us. There are many organizations that are working on this project, so you can get on the phone and say, is this accurate?
Okay, Robert?
One other thing I wanted to add that's important for the caller to recognize is that the Census Bureau conducts a number of surveys throughout the year. So it is possible that she received a mailing for something like the American Community Survey or one of the 100 of other surveys that the Census Bureau conducts. Those will be concurrent with the decennial census, so we have to keep an eye out on those.
Okay, and Jamie Gloche, you are the Tribal Representative Subcommittee Chair, but you also have a history with the census. You worked on the count in 2010. Can you tell me about that experience and why, how it led you to promote it in 2020?
Yeah, thank you. The 2010 experience for me was really a pivotal moment in my life. I had started here as a clerk in Albuquerque and served as a tribal liaison, really educating tribes and leadership about the operations part of the census. And then I went to Navajo Nation and helped open the Window Rock local census office. Navajo Nation is just a huge geographic region the size of West Virginia, very hard to count. Geography is very different.
A lot of those descriptive addresses that
Robert
was talking about.
Yeah, definitely, like 3.5 miles north of, you know, this chapter, west of the sheep corral. So it's definitely different in tribal communities. It was all online, and not online, it was on paper that time around. And really, that moment really showed me why it's so important for Native communities. A lot of our communities rely on federal allocation of funding for homes, for education, for food, for SNAP, all of those essentially benefits that come from.
Okay. Jamie, I'm just going to have to interrupt you real quick here. We're going to take a break. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Ty Bannerman. Do you use government programs like SNAP, Medicaid, or CHIP that rely on census data to allocate money? What would happen if funds for those programs change due to an undercount? Call us at 277-5866. We'll be right back.
The Rothstein Donatelli Law Firm is committed to supporting KUNM, where the law firm's criminal practice can help clients petition state courts to permanently remove public records related to criminal charges and certain convictions. RothsteinLaw.com.
Support provided by Independent Vehicle Service, specializing in Volvo since 1981, offering professional detailing and reconditioned services, just because it's good to have an independent dealer alternative. Details at IVSABQ.com.
Simone Lox was a prisoner at Auschwitz and leader of the prison orchestra. He says music did not offer comfort or peace, that music became a kind of torture, but he played on because his very life depended on it. Coming up, the story and the music of Simone Lox on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. I'm speaking right now to members of the Complete Count Committee working on the U.S. Census, including Robert Radigan, state demographer, Catherine McGill, founder and director of the New Mexico Black Leadership Council and Bernalillo County Complete Count Committee chair. And right before the break, we were speaking to Jamie Glochet, the Tribal Representative Subcommittee chair. And you were telling us a bit about your work on the Navajo Nation and the challenges that it presented.
Yeah, so Navajo is just a huge community, but all over Indian Country, it's really hard to count, primarily because of the long history and distrust with the U.S. government. There is actually the federal, the nation-to-nation relationship that exists with tribes that we have to recognize. And also this time around, the administration is really something that we see as a challenge. But in 2010, you know, that was one, really, really hard because of the geography. Our weather was really hard at that moment. A lot of the economy crashed at that time as well. But it was really eye-opening to me to see how the largest mobilization of people happens. The Census Bureau operations are very timed. They're very quick. You have to make sure you have enough capacity of people. I remember in 2010, I think we recruited over 5,000 people for Navajo alone, and hired over 3,000. And we had a significant budget that does not even equal to what appropriation is now allocated.
Oh, so there was a larger budget at that point.
Absolutely. And this time around, the census is critically underfunded.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that, like how that has happened?
I think it's because of the administration. I don't know, Robert, if you want to add to that, but this is where the burden of the outreach and the education is now falling on the community. Mm-hmm. Before the census did that, they would do a lot of the education, the outreach, the operations. And now this time around, the community has to do that education and outreach. And it's a little bit difficult at times because we have to understand the operations. We have to understand what those nuances are. And then we have to communicate that to our respective communities to make sure they understand and they have that buy-in.
Okay. And you were saying that there's a certain amount of mistrust. And we certainly know that Native Americans have historically been underrepresented in the census data. Can you tell me how you're working to counter those trends?
Absolutely. So locally here in the Albuquerque area, we're working with a lot of Native-led, Native-serving grassroots organizations that have that trust in those communities. In tribal communities, we have a statewide effort with tribal leadership So organizations like the All Public Council of Governors have been really supportive in making sure that tribal leadership is informed. We work with the tribal state complete count committees. There's actually 23 complete count committees throughout all of New Mexico within the tribes. So they're working to educate the people in their communities about the importance of the census and really tailoring the message around to what Catherine had mentioned earlier about, you know, representation matters. This is about generations to come. And one thing that is actually very resonant in our communities is representation of Congresswoman Holland. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the first time that we've seen a congresswoman, someone that looks like, that is Native American, that for me looks like me. And that is really, that resonates with us because we understand now that that is important, especially with congressional redistricting.
Now I'd like to bring into the conversation Marcela Diaz. She is the executive director of Somos Un Pueblo Unido and the Minority and Underrepresented Communities Subcommittee Chair. Thank you for coming in this morning, Marcela.
Thank you, Ty.
So speaking of changes from administration to administration, last year the Trump administration attempted to put a question on the census that asked about citizenship status. That question was ultimately blocked by the Supreme Court. But can you tell me, what is the problem with asking about citizenship?
Well, clearly the citizenship question was a calculated attempt to undercount certain communities in this country. And that has an impact on places like New Mexico, where 1 in 10 approximately New Mexicans is foreign born. And of course, there are many, and most of us live in mixed status families. And so for every person who's afraid to participate in the census, to put their information, and who really has a well-founded fear and distrust of federal government information sharing about our immigration status, our citizenship, this really was a problem. And even though we were able to stop this as a community, as a network of advocacy organizations, including Somos Un Pueblo Unido, we were an organizational plaintiff in one of the 6 lawsuits against the Trump administration for adding the citizenship question. We know that a lot of the damage was done in the process of those lawsuits and in the process of trying to get that citizenship question added. And so now it's up to all of us at the state level to really undo that damage and to really help the immigrant community, the mixed status community, understand what the needs and why we should be motivated to participate in the census.
Now, you said you see this as an attempt to undercount the immigrant community. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me what would be the motivation for undercounting the immigrant community?
For the most part, I mean, there are, for the most part, political representation, certainly. Immigrants are driving growth in a lot of rural communities throughout this country, and New Mexico is no exception. There are places like Lee County, 57% of Lee County is approximately Latino, 17% immigrant, foreign-born, and of course, we have many U.S. citizen children. So for every person who's afraid to participate in the census, from the immigrant community, it's their whole household that doesn't get counted. And that can have a big impact on state funding, political representation here in New Mexico and across the country.
Now, the U.S. has actually misused census data in the past. For instance, during World War II, when Japanese American populations were identified using aggregated census data and then placed into internment camps. So how can we be sure that the government won't misuse the data that they collect?
Well, we immigrants certainly live in uncertain times when it comes to federal government overreach and some of the issues that we've been facing with an uptick in deportation and information at the federal level. But what our job is to just really present the facts to the immigrant community, right? And so we talk about how the census is protected under federal law, how under Title 13 it can only be used for statistical purposes, that it is a crime for any census worker to share that information, and that our personal census information cannot be disclosed for 72 years. Now, again, there are fears in the community community based on, you know, watching television and seeing multiple lawsuits against the Trump administration for violating some of these or violating other laws in relation to immigrants. And so our job is to present the facts and help folks really weigh the issues as they determine whether or not they want to participate in the census. And in reality, you know, Somos un Pueblo Unido, we've already knocked on close to 10,000 doors in four counties that are both semi-rural and rural and semi-urban throughout the state. And so we've been able to get in real time feedback about where immigrant families are at in relation to the census. And there is distrust. There is a fear of again, the federal government in general, information sharing. There's a distrust of both local, state, and federal governments in some communities. And it's our job to really help folks know the facts, overcome them, and really think about what's at stake. And what's at stake, as the other panelists on this show have talked about, is not just the political representation, but the federal funding. And one of the things, you know, one in 10 New Mexicans is immigrants, and we're taxpayers. And so we live in these communities where we want to see our tax money come back to our community for critical programs that can help our families thrive. And so when we talk about the benefits, people generally tend, after the conversations on the doors that we have and in our community spaces, and it's not just Somos doing this, there are many other immigrants' rights organizations doing this in New Mexico and across the country, it really it starts to resonate. This is our money that we want back in our communities. It's our taxes that we've paid and that we don't want going someplace else. We want them for those critical Head Start programs, infrastructure, health care, clinics in our communities, schools. And it's also important for us to help, in this community-based way, figure out what is important to communities in their local communities. What's important to folks in Hobbs, New Mexico might be different. The needs might be different. The resources that people want in their communities might be different than in Santa Fe or in Albuquerque. So that's why it's so important that we come together as community-based organizations with our local governments, with our state, to really provide as much accurate information as possible.
Okay, we are talking about the census in New Mexico, and we are taking your calls. Why is it important to you that your community gets counted accurately? Give us a call at 277-5866 or email us at letstalk@qunm.org. Okay, I want to open up some questions to the panel. What can folks expect in regards to the census over the next half year? Will the workers be coming to their doors or telephone calls or what?
For households that do not respond online by phone or by paper, there will be a knock on the door by a census taker. The Census Bureau anticipates about 35% of the households in this country will not self-respond. They will end up with the they will end up being counted by an enumerator at the door. A lot of the work we're doing is encouraging people to self-respond. So 100% of the households that self-respond get counted. For the households that fall into that non-response universe, then the accuracy and the response rate begins to decline. So we're really trying to motivate people to do it those three ways.
So when they don't respond that way, a census worker will come to their door.
Correct.
What will happen at that point? Marcella?
Then they will, if they didn't self-respond or if they skipped questions and didn't respond thoroughly, the census taker will come and knock on their door and try to get the information through an interview process. And I can say that one of the big messages that Somos un Pueblo Unido and other immigrants' rights organizations in New Mexico and throughout the state are really pushing among immigrants and within the immigrant community is we need to self-respond and we need to self-respond early and we need to self-respond thoroughly so as to avoid a knock on the door. Because, of course, you know, just yesterday and the day before yesterday, there were several households in Albuquerque, Española, Santa Fe, and Belen that got a knock on the door at 6 a.m. by a federal government worker. And it happened to be an ICE agent who came and arrested about 30 folks from our community. Wow. And so that's why it's so important that we, again, in the immigrant community, avoid the knock on the door by responding thoroughly and early in the process.
Now, on this panel, we have several of you who are working in different kinds of environments. And I wanted to ask about what is it like to collect? What is different about collecting data in an urban versus a rural environment versus on a tribal community or in Albuquerque, that kind of thing? Jamie?
It's absolutely different. So in our tribal communities, the operation that the Census Bureau is implementing this time around is called Update Leave. So the Census Bureau will hire folks, hopefully from the community, because they have that trust and they are trusted people. They have that local knowledge, understanding of the geography, language, people. So they're actually going to go out to the household and update the address, the roll address, and then leave the questionnaire. So that's very different from what's happening in the urban spaces. Also, another note with respect to the homeless transient population, that's another operation. Right now, I think the Census Bureau is updating their what they call the group quarters list. So that's inclusive of like dormitories, something like something here at UNM, group homes, places where people reside together but may not be related, homeless shelters. So they're going out right now to make sure their address list is up to date, and then they'll have a point in time count for that specific population, which is another challenge.
And Catherine, you are the chair of the Albuquerque and Bernalillo County Complete Count Committee. What sort of challenges do you expect in an urban environment?
There are many different populations who have language barriers. And so we have to make sure that we have trusted messages in the community that can explain the census process to people with limited English proficiency or who are not English speaking at all, or, you know, to individuals who are deaf and hard of hearing. How are we going to get the information out to most of those individuals? And as Jamie mentioned, the point in time counts for people who are experiencing homelessness. How do we locate people? And, you know, the categories are hard to persuade, hard to locate, hard to interview. And how do we cast a wide net that is going to get to all of those individuals? Also, if we're dealing with communities like the Black community, where there's no specific quote unquote Black community, if we want people are spread out around the community, where are their centers of influence? Where do people gather? How do they get information? And finding out those things is going to require people from all walks of life. It has to be the business community coming to say, how can I help? It has to be individual organizations asking how they can help, everyone working together.
And Marcella?
And one of the, I think, really astute things that this administration did was put together this very broad commission on the Census Commission that really does include folks from different nonprofit organizations and local governments, a few key legislators, folks that represent the philanthropic world that is also kicking in funding for the community-based outreach efforts. And so through and also really inspiring, I think that's one of the other really great things that happened this year through the commission. It was really inspiring a complete count committee in every single county in this state. And those complete count committees in most of the counties really are comprised of community organizations, churches, businesses, folks that have an ear to the ground. And we cannot stress how important it is that we're all throwing down on this, because if we just rely on the U.S. Census Bureau, they're doing a really great job. And on U.S. Census workers, right now there is a scarcity of potential census enumerators for lots of different reasons. But if we're only relying on that, we're not going to get the complete count. We need trusted messengers. We need service-based nonprofit organizations, people who are out in rural communities, people who can really have that conversation about motivation and about why we think that this is safe and why this information is protected. We took about 25 Somos Un Pueblo Unido door knockers around. We're doing pre-education around census and just trying to get a feel for where our community is at, to the last Census Commission meeting in Hobbs. And these are folks who have lived in Hobbs and in Chavez and in rural and semi-rural communities for a number of years. And here they are having those conversations. They speak Spanish. They're from the immigrant community. It's young and old and everything in between from our community. And out of those 25 census takers, there were 10 who have lived in New Mexico for 10, 20, 30 years. In other words, they've had the opportunity to participate in previous censuses, and they didn't. And it wasn't because 10 or 20 years ago there was this deep distrust of the Trump administration. That's new. It was because they just didn't know why it was important. And those are the conversations that we're having and that's motivating people to be counted. Every single person counts, irrespective of your citizenship, irrespective of whether you live in an urban community, rural community, your children. And we don't always count in political processes, and many of us can't vote, but this is something that we can count on.
Okay, I have a question from a listener in Los Alamos. She says that she is visually impaired, lives on Social Security disability, and has difficulty filling out forms without help. Her question is, how will she get counted? Does she have to report her disability now? And she also worries that the Trump administration could use her census information to make her SSDI benefits disappear. So, Robert, do you have thoughts on that?
Well, to the second concern, federal law is crystal clear that these census responses are used for one purpose and one purpose only, and that's for statistical reasons. This information will not be used to affect benefits eligibility. It will be not held against anybody who, I know there's a concern in certain communities about too many people living in a household. Maybe it's beyond the, what the lease allows. This information will not be shared with the property owner. So that's just, there's no reason to fear that her eligibility will be impacted. To the, I can appreciate her. She will probably need some level of assistance. Probably calling the 1-800 number is the best way to respond. I know that the Census Bureau is the process is ADA compliant, whatever that looks like. I can't speak to the specifics of how the visually impaired community will be impacted, but probably filling out our census online or by phone is probably the best.
Can I just say that?
Yes.
I would also say to Robert's point, there is reason to fear. The U.S. has priors in this area. And what we want for individuals like the caller to do is, where are you currently getting resources? Go to those individuals and find out what they're doing. If they're not doing anything, ask them to help you fill out your census document. And also, you can call, as Robert stated, the 1-800 number to fill out the census. But again, I hope that we'll use this as an opportunity to be transformational and not transactional. Go to those services that are there to provide for the public good and ask them to help you.
Okay, and this we are taking a break right now. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. Do you worry that the federal government might misuse your census data? What questions do you have about how the census works? Call us at 277-5866, tweet to us using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM, or email letstalk@kunm.org. We will be back in a moment.
Surgery is a drastic step towards losing weight, but it can be necessary for some people struggling with severe obesity. Native American adults are 50% more likely to be obese than their white counterpart, according to the Office of Minority Health. We'll talk about the pros and cons of weight loss surgery on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
This edition of AR features Kianga Yamata Taylor on the power of social movements.
The pivot to elections has distracted in some ways from the important task of building the biggest, broadest, and most effective movement possible. The social movement is the mechanism that preserves the interest of those outside of the corrupting and tranquilizing influence of electoral politics.
That's Alternative Radio, Saturday night at 6 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. And Jamie, I think you wanted to jump in on that last question there about visual disability and other reasons that might prevent somebody from filling out the form.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that it's really important for communities and people that are doing the education and outreach to be really familiar with the questionnaire. The questionnaire does not actually ask any questions about income for this specific one. So I think it's really important, especially when you're trying to assist people in the questionnaire, especially if you have elderly people who are, trying to fill out the form. It's really important that they understand the questionnaire. With the Native community, the question for us is, what tribe are you? And a lot of us are multiple tribes, so there's a lot of confusion right now around what you put down.
And that actually brings me to a comment from a Songtree on Facebook. They want to know, do different states have a different launch date? How is the census working in terms of when it starts? Is each state going to start at a different time?
Alaska's already started. Remote mm-hmm. parts of Alaska have started. That's an exception. It's a very small number of households that the enumeration began in January. For the most part, most households in the country, the invitation to respond will be mailed out around March 12th. So it'll be on a rolling basis. And I can't say which states will be first, but the mailings will go out March 12th. And all the mailings will be out probably about March 15th, March 16th. And that portal to respond online opens on March 12th.
And then Songtree also wanted to know a little bit more about if you are a tribal member, as you were mentioning, do you declare a tribe or a pueblo, or do you classify yourself as American Indian? How will that look on the census form?
So it's really interesting. So data in Native communities is, I think, very difficult at times because we only represent less than 2% of the population. A lot of the data that we see about us is we're often othered, so we're put in these other categories. And then there's also the distinction of American Indian alone, Alaska Native alone, American Indian combined. And what we're hearing from the Bureau is that you have the ability to put your tribal representations. For me, for example, I'm Navajo, White Mountain Apache, and Kiowa, so I can list all three. But in the questionnaire, it actually says, like, what is your, I think, your enrolled tribe, and then you would put that first. And then to add on that nuance is you're going to have to put the tribal identification that is consistent with the federal registry. So we have had discussions with the Bureau about, okay, so, for example, does someone put Diné, you know, which they identify as, or Navajo? So that's something that is really confusing, and we're trying to get some clarity on that as well.
And do you have a sense for how much the Native population is undercounted typically?
Yeah, in 2010, the estimate was 4.9%. And the numbers are astronomical, even with a 1% undercount for all of our communities. One thing that's also really interesting is this what I call the greatest survey of the decade. It really informs us about not only the resource allocation, but how our population is shifting. Mm-hmm. So in the 2010 census, it actually demonstrated that a lot of Native people, 78%, live off of tribal lands now. And here in Albuquerque, we're actually sixth in the country with the highest percentage of Native population, as well as seventh with the highest number of Native populations here.
And so 4.9% undercount. And do we have a sense for how much of a difference that makes in terms of federal money, in terms of representation? Robert?
According to some research out of George Washington University, it tries to quantify the fiscal impacts of the census and a census undercount. And we know from that research that every New Mexican counted in the 2010 census generated about $3,700 annually in federal funds. But because this is something we do only every 10 years, it's really $37,000 per New Mexican that doesn't respond. The figure is actually higher for Native Americans because there's certain programs that the eligibility for the state and for communities within our state and for individuals are specific to Native Americans. So the math is much more complicated than that. But roughly speaking, each New Mexican counted in the census is worth about $37,000 in federal revenue over the next decade.
Okay, Catherine.
Well, I think it also in terms of the demographic data, as Jamie was mentioning, if people put the category of other, it doesn't get counted within our community. We know that that is an issue in the Black community as well. If people are two or more races or a mixed race and they identify as other, it doesn't get counted in the demographic data. If you identify as Black, then you should respond in that category.
Okay. So I know Marcella mentioned that there is an issue getting census workers this year. How can people get involved in the census if they're interested in being part of this count?
Well, the administration, DFA, the Census Commission at the state level has put together a really wonderful website called
icountnm.gov. Yes.
Thank you. And there's a lot of really great information about the community-based efforts that are happening, why it's so important, a lot of the statistics that you've been hearing about today on the show, but also links to how people can participate if they want to become census workers. This is a problem across the country, especially in rural communities. There have been attempts successfully to raise the actual pay for census workers, mm-hmm. but there's a, you know, nationally a lower unemployment rate than there was 10 years ago. And so folks have jobs, and so there's just a dearth of folks, particularly in our communities, who can speak various languages to participate. So if you want to work directly,
thank you,
for the census,
you can get some of that information at the iCount. And I just also want to say that that iCountNM.gov website, which is just really well done, has been translated into Spanish and Vietnamese. And so one of the wonderful things about this process, again, is that it's...
We're trying to make this less transactional and more transformational, as one of the other panelists said. And it's really an opportunity for us to learn about each other. And one of the things, and I'm an immigrant advocate, and I've been doing this for 20 years, and I didn't realize that Vietnamese was the third language outside of English most spoken in our state. And so it was really important for us as a commission to make sure that we were helping take some really, to really advance the conversation about how diverse our state is and why it's so hard to count certain populations. So this has been a really good opportunity for us to all learn about each other.
Okay, and Jamie, did you want to?
Yeah, I have to stress that it's so important that the Bureau is able to recruit people. You know, they take the stance they want neighbors to count neighbors. These are trusted people in your community, people that look like you, people that speak your language, that understand the local geography, have that local knowledge. It is so, so critical. And what's great about the Census Bureau jobs is it's really flexible, so you can, you know, a lot of retired people go and do that. Young people, it's a great opportunity to learn and to engage. So it's just so important, and that could actually affect an undercount if there aren't enough people to do the work and have that knowledge and that trust in those communities.
Now, I wanted to ask about several times we've used the word transformative versus transactional, and I'd like to see if we can kind of what exactly does that mean to have the census be a transformative effort, Catherine?
What I think is that if we look at the census just on the face of the census, just saying that we're just trying to get a count, we're, you know, going out the enumerators if people don't self-respond to get a count, that's a narrow conception of what this is really about. It's really about how New Mexico is respected. And the framers of the Constitution talked about you will be represented based on your respective numbers. So it's about respect. And if we look at communities that need, you know, to be empowered, that this is an opportunity for us to look at as a way to be empowered. For instance, you know, the spoke with someone from the deaf and hard of hearing community who said that they don't really know how many people are in that community. It's an opportunity for them to get the numbers they need, then to perhaps help to serve more of their community and create a better and a more thriving community where everyone has a voice and is counted.
Okay, we are talking about the U.S. Census today, and we are taking your calls and comments. Have you worked for the census in the past? What kind of experience did you have? Call 277-5866 or email us at letstalk@kunm.org and tell us what that was like. I have a question from Austin on Twitter. The New Mexico Native American Census Coalition is organizing tribal members in all federally recognized tribes about the importance of the census, along with translators for several indigenous languages, including Tewa and Jicarilla Apache. And they would like to know if you have anything to add about those language needs and services. Jamie?
It's absolutely critical, again, that we have people that speak languages that are representative of the community. The census questionnaire is done in English and Spanish, and I know it's also done in Navajo, but it's not inclusive of all indigenous languages. So it's absolutely important that you hire people that understand that, especially when speaking with elders. And the immigrant population as well. You have to be able to translate those questions so that there's an accurate response.
Now, one question I have about census workers is there might be many folks in New Mexico who may be reluctant to share their data. For instance, if there are people living in a planned community, a intentional community that have a low level of trust, or a religious organization that may have concerns about the federal government being involved in their data, how do you go ahead and reach out to people who might really not want to be counted?
Right. You know, the important thing is to have a local trusted voice educate them on that, right? So what this commission is not trying to do is to dictate from Santa Fe what's going to be the most effective messaging in the diverse communities throughout our state. So that's the work of the local complete count committees, the county level complete count committees that are strategizing to that end. I think Marcella made a great point earlier about encouraging folks who may be reluctant to engage with the federal government. The best way to avoid having to engage with a federal worker is to complete your census online by phone or by paper, and then nobody's going to come knocking on your door.
Now, in 2010, there were at least 370 incidents involving threats or even violence against census takers. Are there circumstances that are dangerous for census workers? What happens then?
Well, I mean, there certainly are situations in some parts of our state where it could be seen as threatening to approach somebody's property. Again, that's where this awareness campaign comes in and localizing the messaging so that leaders in the community can give people a heads up. Hey, the census is coming. This is constitutionally mandated. These data are only used for one purpose. Please cooperate with the census taker. Or, better still, respond online by paper, by phone, and nobody will come knocking on your door.
And Catherine, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about people who lack a fixed address, like people who are experiencing homelessness or those staying in a shelter. How do you make sure that they can fill out a form?
Well, we have to rely on people who are already working with that population for people who are experiencing homelessness. They are the trusted messengers in that community, and so they have processes in place already that where they provide service and have contact with people who are experiencing homelessness. So our job is to make sure that they have the resources that they need, that they're appropriately resourced and have the information to be able to share it with the population that they're already serving.
And Jamie?
Yeah, that is so critical. So the Coalition to End Homelessness did this effort in 2019 where they did a point in time count. And one thing that the Native population is really seeing as a challenge and a barrier is that a lot of our population here in Albuquerque, actually 44% of the homeless community is represented by Native people. So we've been working really close with them. And that is true. They are the trusted messengers. They're working with this community each and every day. And they have to actually send that message. So what we're seeing is a lot of community-based organizations, they're having to continue to talk to people to educate them and let them know, like, the census is coming. It's important you respond. These are the reasons why, because this affects you.
Okay. And Marcella, are there ways that you can reach out to the immigrant population rather than having people come and knock on their door? What are the best ways to interact?
Well, certainly through community-based organizations. We've nested our census outreach since August of 2019 with our Know Your Rights workshops, with our citizenship workshops, with lots of different community-based campaigns where we were doing that work and talking about the census. Mm-hmm. And so Somos isn't alone in that. Other organizations like El Centro de Igualdad de Derechos and CAFE and others in our state have been able to do that. And we've been able to really come together and figure out what are the best practices. We are doing door knocking because we find that using some of these hard to count maps and using the Voter Action Network has really given us an opportunity to really be able to go door to door and have those quality conversations with folks. That has been really helpful. Obviously, we won't be doing that when the census takers are out on the doors. We're doing it. Somos Un Pueblo Unido did it in November and December, and we're starting in Rio Arriba County this week. But that pre-education door-to-door is really, really working, at least for us. We're finding that at the beginning of the conversation, if people don't know what the census is, at the end of the conversation, they say that they're likely to participate, especially when we're able to break down some of the perceived barriers on participating in the census. And so through churches, through local businesses, through the door knocking, through the phone banking, these are things that community-based organizations have already been engaged in for many, many years in our GOTV campaigns, in our issue-based campaigns. And so we're really good at doing this. And so we're employing all of those strategies when it comes to getting out the count, or what we like to call the GOTC part of our work.
Okay, and just real quick, I wanted to make sure that we got that 800 number out before the closing. Robert, what's the 800 number?
It's not public yet.
Oh, okay, I see. I'm sorry.
It's coming.
It's coming. All right, so keep your eye on the website. Okay. Well, that is all the time that we have today. Thanks to everyone who called in to share your thoughts. Thanks so much to all of our guests. Let's keep this conversation going. Share your thoughts on Twitter, hashtag Let's Talk NM on Facebook, or on Facebook. Search for KUNM Radio or email letstalk@kunm.org. If you missed part of the show, you can stream it online or subscribe to our podcast. You can find it wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And also, there is a live stream, which you can check out on Facebook, KUNM Radio, or NMPBS Facebook pages. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Taylor Velasquez screened your calls. Bryce Dix live tweeted the show today. Hannah Colton produced the show, and our executive producer is Marisa DeMarco. I'm Ty Bannerman. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.